I think, you know, I did not really learn it. It is, I love people and I love to really understand what drives them. That was always my thing.
Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. My name is Paul Ripke. I'm a photographer, podcaster, storyteller. I do a fashion label and mainly I'm a watch lover. And that's one of the reasons why I'm the special host of this podcast. Like Christoph Granger, the CEO of IWC, is going to talk to successful and inspiring personalities about their life and about their visions every week. I'm going to try to talk to the people behind the brand at IWC, at the watchmaking industry. I hope we're going to discover the secret behind IWC watches and the heritage behind the brand. Let's talk to an expert now. Let's dive deeper. My name is Paul Ripke. Welcome to another episode of Partners in Time. Hello, everybody, and very nice to have you with us today. Today, we're going to talk to somebody, or I'm going to talk to somebody, a woman that proves women can achieve a lot. She's responsible for the development and implementation of the company's global strategy in over 20 markets. She's also chair of the IWC Sustainability Committee and was previously CEO of the luxury hosiery brand Fogal. Is that spelled like, did I pronounce it right?
Yeah, that's perfect.
First question, Franziska.
That's perfect, okay. Paul. I'm happy to be here with you today.
You've also gained a great deal of experience in the commercial sector through various sales and marketing roles. So you've been at Feldschlösschen, which is a Swiss Carlsberg brand beer. So you like beer? Do you like beer?
Yes, I really love beer. Meanwhile, I spent more than 8 years in the brewery industry, so I really like it. Yeah.
Okay. And you've been a marketing director there, right? And then you've been member of the board of directors for the chocolate luxury brand Lindt & Sprüngli.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your career pretty much summed up very fast and short? Did I miss something?
Yes, you missed something because I started actually in fashion. So first I worked in the advertising industry, and then I had 2 years in fashion as a retail or sales director for a Danish brand. And then I joined the beer industry because I felt like now, you know, after fashion, advertising and fashion, I need to be a bit more rooted. And I wanted to have, as I called it at the time, a very honest product. And beer is super honest, right?
It is, totally. So, but I forgot to introduce you properly. Welcome, Franziska Xell, the Chief Marketing Officer, member of the Board of Directors of IWC Schaffhausen, which started in fashion, went to beer, then chocolate, and is now in the topic of watches. Hello, Franziska. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. Thank you for welcoming so nicely.
So you are CMO. You're mainly responsible for marketing, right?
Yes.
That's your job position. But today, it's Earth Day. We're calling each other on Earth Day. And I do want to talk about sustainability because that's something that's of a big interest for me. I heard it's of big interest for the company as well as you personally. So what do you do? Like, honestly, I do understand sustainability in cars, in fashion, in consumer goods that are a lot of pieces. What's the thing about sustainability in the watch industry?
I think first of all, you know, when we think about the product we are producing, it's a lasting product. So it is already sustainable because it ticks on your wrist forever and ever. You can hand it over to the next generation. At IWC, we produce for more than 150 years watches, luxury watches, and some of them still tick. So that means sustainable, yes, because the product is sustainable as such, but then we have to make sure that everything that goes in that product is most responsibly done. And that is where we focus on, so that we have our long-term thinking going into the product and that we, I mean, make sure, you know, that the world we live in, because we have just this one world, goes into a better position.
But help me out right now. So there's the watch, there's the wristband, and there's packaging. That's probably the three topics where you can talk about sustainability, right?
Not really.
On the producing level.
No, there's even more. I mean, think about when we say from the sketchbook to the wrist, If you think all the different steps, so it's from the sourcing, obviously, you know, until you have produced the product as such. There we show, you know, how responsible we do it. But then it goes even into marketing, my area, you know, that we speak about sustainable events, for instance, that we speak about FSC, Forest Stewardship Council certified wood, you know, in our boutique. So you can go much further than only the product, the packaging, and the strap. I mean, the strap is part of the product, but so you can go much further.
Okay, but let's start with the product and then tell me about the... I did not think that through totally, that it is really... You're totally right. The events, I didn't think about the events. You do launch events and stuff like that. I've talked to Christian Knop about storytelling as well, and all of the events to launch new products is part of the storytelling as well. But product-wise, so sourcing, that's what you do regarding sustainable material to source watches.
I think, first of all, it's really important that a customer knows precisely well what goes into the product and knows, you know, that everything is really done in the most responsible way. So in our industry, when we talk about precious metal and precious stones, there is an organization that's the leading organization, that's the Responsible Jewelry Council. And we are a member since 2012. And have been certified in early 2014 for the first time. So this is, as I said, it's a non-profit association dedicated to working for best social, ethical, and environmental practices in the watch and jewelry industry. And this is really from mines to retail. So that means, as a member, and we are a member, we have to be independently audited by the RJC standards. So you look really into all the different business areas to really understand that you get this certification. That means that all our suppliers of precious metal and diamonds are certified as well. So we have just recently, last year, been certified again on the highest standard, on the latest standard of the Code of Practices. And we just achieved in last February the chain of custody certification, which means that this really traces all the precious metal components in the watch. So that is another achievement we have, but all goes into the same direction, that you have clarity, you know, that what goes into the product is responsibly done.
Okay. But so 2012, that's super early, right? So it was important to IWC before Greta came around. That you take care of the sourcing, right?
Yeah, but I think it goes back, you know, into what we said at the very beginning, you know, that you choose a mechanical watch, a luxury timepiece as companion on your wrist, and this companion stays on your wrist forever. So it's a product you keep. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense, you know, that our thinking is long-term as well.
Okay. Packaging, I saw like... I own a big pilot, and it comes with, like, it's not only an Apple packaging you throw away straight away, it's made for travel as well, right?
Yes.
Is that something you made out of sustainability, or why, when did that happen? When did you change that?
Yeah, we introduced this new packaging system in 2019, and it was actually through just observing, you know, how our people act with the product. And as you just described it, I mean, we have people which are traveling a lot with the watches. And then we said, okay, the solution must be a little travel pouch so that you create a product in its own right. So it's not just the packaging, it's a product in its own right. What we then did, I mean, we reduced the volume and weight by 30%. We reduced the plastic by 90%. What is still in is recyclable plastic. So that is, you know, to really make this product with its own right, sustainable. And then, I mean, you can add to it. I mean, if you really want to go for a bigger packaging, you can purchase a box on top of it. And you can even put four of these travel pouches into the box and you have a collector's box. So it's an entire system we introduced.
Who's pushing for these kind of things at IWC? Is it Chris? I talked to Christian Knob. Who's pushing for that? Is that your kind of topic?
It's actually, I mean, it's all of us, because we established a committee, which I chair. And in the committee, we have 11 members. So 50% of the members are my executive committee colleagues. And then we have all the different departments of the company represented. And I think that is the key to our journey, I would say, you know, that we have, that we make ourselves accountable. And then we involve, you know, all the employees at IWC as well. I mean, they can add and bring ideas to the table, which we are collecting. And this is not just in Schaffhausen, this is globally. So we have in all the markets, we have sustainability ambassadors. We collect feedback from our customers. We have a close conversation with our suppliers. So you have so many different angles where ideas come at the table. But I think important is that we have established a bit more than 5 years ago this committee, where we meet 4 times a year and really put ourselves, you know, into the responsibility that we really act on our goals. And I think that is another topic, how we have chosen to do that. Because if you are around for 150 years and we are not a startup, I mean, if you do a startup, you can be sustainable from day one on. We have been very sustainable from day one on as well, because we have this lasting product. But then if you change and go into all the different fields, that's why I said before, it's a journey that never ends. You will never end that journey, but it's important that you set yourself objectives, which you can then measure against. And therefore, we decided a couple of years ago that we go into an open conversation and publish a sustainability report. We just published last summer the 3rd edition, and it's the 2nd on global reporting initiative standards. This is important that you give, you know, this full transparency. So we put then these goals we have decided as a team, together with the CEO, of course, as well, that these are the goals for the next cycle, for the next 2 years. And then we measure against it. And this is publicly visible, because you can just go on our website and then you see the report and you see the 8+1 goals we have for the next cycle, which ends in 22. So I think that is really important, you know, because then when you commit yourself and you commit yourself to a transparent dialogue, you get feedback. You get feedback from all the different stakeholders. And that makes this journey exciting, uncomfortable as well, because it's, you know, for us humans, it's easier not to change. But I see, you know, in at IWC, this is really involving everybody, and everybody is happy to contribute. I think that is really a great story of success.
Totally. It's you know what I'm thinking of? It's I did 2 years ago. I'm quite overweight. And I'm very social, and I like to drink too much, to be honest. I should not work in the beer industry. So I talked to a doctor, I did a couple of tests, and he said, like, well, you got to watch out at the end. Your blood pressure is too high. So, and I do some Instagram stuff, and I do a podcast, and I publicly said I'm going to do 1 year of veganism.
Oh, I did that. So plant-based. I already did it.
Yeah. And yeah. 1 year of non-alcohol. So that's been the two things I wanted to change. And at the end, what made me change it was the publicly, like the announcing and then being accountable for it. So you're kind of doing and it's been the only kind of goal I really succeeded in the last 10 years in my private life. You know, like I tried so many times to, I should drink less, I should do this and that, I should start sport or whatever. But the moment I put it out there, and really made myself accountable for it. And that's where I had to push super hard. And I just read an article about there's a website where you can, like, it's kind of the same thing, but in a total different way. You tell them, I have this goal for this month. And then you have to put up money, and it goes to a very bad cause, which I don't think we should support that. But it's interesting that humans go to the, like, reach their goals once it hurts them if they don't reach it, you know. So we need a little bit of push, and I kind of feel that this is also, you know, if you make that public and if you if you're stating that that's what we want to do, 2 years later, somebody will ask you, why didn't you do it?
if
you
absolutely.
Didn't do it or if you succeed. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's super interesting.
And you can never go back, right? You cannot now all of a sudden say, you know what? We don't publish any longer. No. I mean, this journey you started and you have to continue.
Yeah, totally. How did COVID hit? Like, did that change the whole? Because the next circle ends in 2021, you said?
End no, 2020.
Or
2020.
2020.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what did that sustainability and COVID-19, how did that change or affect the whole system? I mean, it turned the world upside down.
It did. And I think it has changed us. I mean, there are, even in this COVID, I think there are positive, very positive things in. I think most of us, we care more. I mean, we think maybe twice before we purchase. We think what we purchase. We start to question, you know, we question companies, how they do their business. And I think this is great. This is great because us as the customers, we have an enormous power. We just have to live it. And I think it has really changed for the good as well. I mean, the challenges are, we are all in those challenges, right? I mean, it's not the easiest time in our lives, most probably. But the good thing is, you know, that we think about our planet more often now and that we question maybe now in our industry, in our case, in my case personally, you know, whether in the future, do I really have to fly everywhere or could I maybe do a Zoom session instead of flying? I mean, these are things you know, you can change. Or when we talked then about marketing, do you always have to do a physical event? Has that to be a huge, big event or can it be a bit more personal? And maybe you let other people participate by just a digital attendance could be an option too. I mean, yeah, you just question, you question personal things like, do I really need that? Should I eat less meat? For instance, you just mentioned before the vegan topic. I mean, I try that, you know, with my son and my husband, and they are both into meat quite big. I never really ate meat, so it's easier for me. But to just question, do you have to eat meat every day? Most probably not. Questions like, should I not pay more attention to eat organic and have, you know, the food from the region and in the season? I mean, these are so small steps we can all do.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about your personal life. Like, where did you grow up? You're Swiss, right?
From I'm Swiss. And I think, you know, what is funny is that I grew up in Schaffhausen. So in Schaffhausen,
really?
You know, where our company is based, and my father used to be an engineer. So I basically grew up with IWC because my father had an engineer IWC. So I grew up with it. And when I was then in my early 20s, I left Schaffhausen and I said, I will never, ever come back. But you should never say that. Yeah, but I grew up in Schaffhausen. I still have my brother living in Schaffhausen with his family. My father still lives very close to Schaffhausen. So it's a bit coming home, right? I do remember, you know, when I had my first day at IWC, and it was not the first day, but we had the first gathering with all the employees in Schaffhausen, and this is 800 people. And then we went to go to the theater of the town because we haven't had such a big meeting room and still don't. And then I was on stage there in the theater in Schaffhausen, and you wouldn't believe that, but when I was really little, I took ballet classes and I was on that stage and I dreamed of becoming a super ballerina, which of course was not really my talent. So I had to give in after 10 years, but I was standing on that stage. And that was funny because when I gave my first speech, I told the audience, you know, that I was standing there when I was 4 and felt like I become the prima ballerina. And now I'm here for IWC, which is very beautiful as well.
It's sort of a prima ballerina still, right? So it's not too far away, to
be honest.
Not
too far away.
When were you more nervous, the 4-year-old, or I don't know how old you were when you started that job, but like the CMO starting at IWC or the 4-year-old ballerina, which made you more nervous on that stage?
I believe it was when I was 4 years old, because then the stage is even bigger, right? I mean, when you're so little.
It's a perspective thing.
Yeah.
So, okay. But Your father being an engineer, so that always interested you, or did you not care about till you started in IWC in any of mechanical things? Or because I got to be honest, it's quite a male thing, right? So I don't know about the quote at IWC, but it is quite surprising that you in a male-dominated luxury segment are that successful. It should not be. I believe I have two daughters, and I hope the world changes very much into more people like you. But it's still a little bit unusual, your way of career, right?
Yeah, but you could say that from the beginning of my career. I mean, is beer so typical for a woman? And no. And knowing me from fashion to beer is quite a step. But I really enjoyed it. And I mean, I'm Swiss. I'm 100% Swiss. And I think when I look back into my career, then I was working for the largest brewery in Switzerland. I was working for the chocolate company in Switzerland. And to then on top, you know, add the luxury watch industry with IWC makes my journey perfect, right? Because it was always beautiful, beautiful Swiss brands. And when you then ask mechanical watches, there is such a dedication, such a passion. You know, when you look at the watchmakers, the skills they have, you know, that they put these tiny, tiny little things together and that at the end it works. I remember, you know, when I did my watchmaking classes, after 2 hours, I was completely stiff, nearly blind. And of course, my movement and these 5 parts I should actually take out and bring back, my movement was not working any longer. So I have a lot of appreciation for just the skill set and the craftsmanship. And when you then ask about, is this a male industry? I wouldn't necessarily say that, because there are so many women which are interested even in high complications, you know, to understand what that specific watch, you know, can give you. I wouldn't say, you know, that it is not an industry for women, but I agree there are not so many.
It's super interesting to listen to you and have tons of questions. So how different is it? Because I'm thinking about now you're in the watch industry. So it's a product you repetitively, maybe daily, maybe once a week or whatever, see the beauty of, and it probably grows on you. The more you look at it, the longer you, let's say, consume it or you use it, the better it is for you, which is the total opposite of beer and chocolate, right? So beer is gone. The moment you drink it, chocolate is the same thing. Did that change your approach?
Yes. I mean, when you just now look into the marketing approach, it's completely different. And I often describe it as a journey or as a journey you do. And when we are with you before then you purchase maybe our precious timepiece, the interactions are quite intense, and often it takes more than a year until you have decided on that product, which makes the marketing mix, so to speak, or the different approaches we take until we are close to you and this conversation we have to you with you quite different, because as you just described it, I mean, honestly, we don't have to think for a year, you know, whether we now buy this chocolate bar or not. I mean, this is completely different. What always fascinated me is that it is actually at the end the same person, right? It's just a different need. It's the same person. And then it's about the cleverness, you know, how and when do I approach you with what answer? And that is what fascinates me, because here I have a longer journey. I have you a bit longer with me, and I can learn a lot about you if I'm open to see that. And I think that is what fascinates me in my job still today, that that you speak to humans, right? And that I mean, I still learn a lot. I still learn a lot after so many years. I mean, I'm 25 years in the business, and I was never bored. And till today, you know, we can do so many new things. And even what you just said before, and this crisis, this COVID crisis, brought completely new approaches on our tables and accelerated some of the projects we anyhow already wanted to do. And that is the fascinating part about it. And as you said, yes, you grow on the product, because we talked about cars, or you mentioned cars. in sustainability, but the car, your car, is outside in your parking lot, right? Whereas your watch sits on your wrist. So it's really your companion in life. It always is with you.
Yeah. The fact that we are talking, the fact that we created this film together about me or whatever, is a big change in marketing as well, I think.
Yes.
You know, and that's it's shifting right now. It's right now, and that's also a result of COVID, that people are not, I think people are not too much interested in, yeah, random messages. You got to think about what you as a brand, as a company, tell. The stories need to be proper, real, authentic stories. And that's something not a lot of people can do. And you guys did that for 15 years. Like I've seen, and I've worked for you for IWC in 2009 with Christian Knoop on those sailing pictures for Portuguesa Line. And that's already been the authentic definition, because you didn't choose a superstar as a testimonial. You choose Jacques Cousteau's assistant, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. nobody knew who he was, but it fills the whole story with realness, talking in hip hop, with authenticity. So, and I'm seeing that. I mean, I'm right now, I'm super stoked. We released the video yesterday about me, but I'm blown away.
And that went through the roof. Have you seen that? I mean, that went through the roof.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And I'm most touched, to be honest, I'm most touched by people write me messages, long emails, that they watch the video 6 to 8 times and it truly touched them because they're in a moment where they're not sure what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
And to at least see the blank page, the leaving part, the courage to go away from situations that encourage them to do something different. And to be able to touch a person like this with a brand piece, you know, that's, I think, insane value. And that's something that's way bigger than here's your watch, 20% off this price. This is a true context of high quality.
And this is exactly how you describe it. You know, it's not this polished, super polished content. It's real people like you who tell their story, which are story of humans around the globe. And this is what we want to do. Authentic storytelling. Yes, the product is always in the center, of course. I mean, at the end of the day, I am marketing our beautiful timepieces, but it's real stories. It's real experiences we have, with people who value our product as much as we do, and we tell those stories. And as you describe now, the feedback on your movie is that people feel encouraged to go their way as well. And we say it's against all odds. So this is the creators of the future, but not the creators, you know, who everybody speaks about and everybody knows. That is not so much the point. It is that you and I, we can fulfill our dream if we really want to do that. And that is what we try to communicate.
Which is the right way. It's you're talking truth right here. And I do agree 100%. But I'm also doing this for like 4, 5, 6 years now. My personal branding, let's say, marketing or like selling myself, my person, my name, my brand. And I got to tell you, you were the first one who said, we just want you to have, like, the only rule you had, we want you to be super proud of it. So do a film that you like. That's number one rule, which nobody else does. Like, all the companies I worked with in the past, they all thought about their goals and tried to put them into my world. And I do believe the only thing we really succeeded in is it's authentic. It is really me. And that's because you didn't start like, okay, here we should focus on the date feature of the big pilot 46. So let's find a moment where you say it's very important to put the right date in there. So the word date in it. But that's how other companies work. They try, they have their goals. They say, okay, we want to market this. And they don't want to market a feeling or a story. They want to market their product. And it's super interesting. And that's like, it is, we're now 24 hours in, but it's by far the most successful thing also I did in 4 years. Because I think it is authentic and you let me do it, which it doesn't mean that I'm the superstar. It just means at least I created a black or white or whatever, like the story I wanted to tell. And if it's good or bad, we will find out. But at the end, the worst thing that could happen, I think, is a gray story. You know, like you mix up 17 opinions. And I mean, you didn't give me a briefing. And still, I hope you're okay with the feature, how much I featured the watch. And the whole message is kind of like, at least you told me that you're happy with the message that this film transports.
No, so, it's perfect. It's really perfect. And I think the magic in it is that when you asked about how are you choosing the talents, I mean, this is about, yes, you agree, you know, that you are the right person. And then there is the trust in it. If you don't have that, then of course you become the super freak and control everything and have to do 1,000 briefings. And at the end, everybody feels it. You feel that it's not authentic and you feel that I just want to sell you something, right? We are humans. We feel
totally.
It. Yeah.
yeah.
But it needs some courage as well. Yeah. It needs some courage as well, you know, to give this freedom. Yeah. You are a creative person and we trust you and we believe that we share the same values. And if that is said, you can give some freedom, else it's not working.
Oh, and you're going to fail too. Like we're now talking about me. Okay, it's kind of all right. But there's probably also a couple of people who don't like this. I mean, that's the other thing. Like there's going to be to be honest, there's no product you can produce and everybody will love it.
No,
it's gonna
never.
Be hated or love it, and then but at least you have somebody who's loving it. And the worst thing is like a middle kind of, and that's not working out. I totally agree, and it's totally right. Super interesting to see that. What did you study? I have three more questions. What did you study? How did you end up in this job?
Economics, but I honestly knew at a very early stage that economics I chose because I didn't know actually what to do. But then I knew it has to be commercial, so sales, marketing, this is me. And then okay. I felt marketing is what I really want to do because I was always fascinated, you know, by the future, by the trends, how you can influence people as well, how the brain works. And I felt like marketing is this magic combination between scientific results. You know, you get KPIs, key performance indices. You have that, but then you have to develop a feeling for it as well. So it's this emotional part where I still believe you cannot really learn it. You have that or you don't. And this combination between numbers and feeling was fascinating me. So I knew from a very early stage that is my field. I felt then I go first into sales because I love selling as well. I really do. And I think, you know, in marketing, you have both. I mean, you have the sales part in it as well. So I honestly, I felt never that I was on the wrong seat of the bus. I always knew, I mean, this is my passion and it's my passion till today. I really love what I do. I really do. I really do. It's not comfortable, right? Because you can, and we talk, of course, about IWC. And when I look at our formula and I compare to other companies I have worked, I think what we do here is really, we have little comfort zone. We have no comfort zone, so to speak. And we do everything. When we take the kitchen language is mise en place. I mean, it's not, you know, that, we did it last time like this, so it was successful, so let's do it again and make just the color a bit different. That's not us. We always start from scratch. Very uncomfortable, very busy, very crazy often. But we all love that, you know, and I look at my team, they all love it as well because else you cannot cope with the speed, right? And you would not believe that because that's the watch industry. And I said at the beginning, the watches, they tick forever, but not our formula, right? I mean, we really invent everything from scratch every day again, which makes it very lively.
Where did you learn that? Because I learned it in music. I took pictures and videos of musicians, of bands, and I learned them, I watched them not being repetitive, you know, because as a musician, you can produce the same album, the slow song, the hit song, the funny song, the disco song, and do the same kind of, yeah, you have the same voice, you do different words, but kind of the same thing, but then you're not going to be there. So success doesn't come with repetition, I think. It comes with change and a couple of things don't work. Who taught you what you just said? Like, where did you learn? Which is totally true. I 100% agree with it. But I don't know a lot of people who also feel like that.
I think, you know, I did not really learn it. It is, I love people. I really do. And that was already when I was little and four and on this stage and wanted to be become the Super Bowl arena, which I never succeeded to be. But I mean, I was always watching people, trying to understand why they are acting differently or why they are responding to something. And that started for me at a very early stage. And when I said, you know, I always knew I wanted to go into marketing, that's not entirely correct. I wanted to go into trend scouting. That was my dream after my studies. And then it just didn't happen. And then I realized that marketing as a broader scale is really what I like. But I think it's just by staying curious, and I'm still today, I'm really curious, and I like it, you know, when there are so many changes. And I have a lot of colleagues in the marketing team, which are much younger than I am, and they challenge me on their way, because I mean, they come up with constantly with new ideas as well. And then the magic is, you know, that you look into it, that you understand how it moves people. This is still today, this is my big fascination. It's my big fascination. That's why I would sum it up that I'm really a people's person. I love people and I love different people, you know, to really understand what drives them. That was always my thing.
You can feel that. I'm listening to you. You feel that you're passionate about it. That's super, super nice. And that's a huge success. I mean, not a lot of people can talk that passionate about their job. It's super nice. Two more questions. Number one is, if you create stuff at IWC, if you have to decide, do you do it for customers or do you do it for yourself? Because like that's for me interesting, me personally, because one moment, like I took pictures or videos for other photographers or for people who watch those photos. And then I started, the longer I did it, also the more successful I got, the more I trusted my gut. I did stuff I liked and then put it out. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't hit, because in my job, I cannot fit the customer's needs at the end, you know? The only thing I can fit is my own opinion. And at the end, it's 50-50. That's where I am right now. I'm producing whatever I produce is 50% in mind what people who watch or consume the product are going to think. And 50% is just what I want. So it's a mixture of both. What's those numbers at IWC? Like who are you listening to as an input if you're creating new stories for the future?
I mean, it's now easy to say for me it's 50-50 here as well. But I mean, of course, the customer is always in the center. And of course, we are listening and looking and watching, you know, what the feedbacks are and where we have a good interaction and where we have a high engagement. Of course, that influences your gut feeling as well. But then the gut feeling and your intuition is very important as well. And yeah. I would say here I have more freedom to bring in my personal opinion as well. When I just look back into my career, I knew in the past in the fast moving consumer goods industry, most often, you know, for instance, when I really loved the packaging and I felt like these are the most beautiful colors, it was a guarantee that it failed in the shelf.
I have another question, which is more like when you're applying to me, what's been your best product so far? What's been the best product in your whole business life so far?
Oh, I had so many.
just the best.
The
just
best.
One. Yeah. What's been the best? What were you most proud of? How old is your son?
My son is 10 and he is 10. Okay. So cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't really
you
show
know what,
videos
but you
yet,
know but, what was really funny, you know, when I decided to join IWC and I told Maxim, I told him, listen, you know, I go now away from hosiery and knitwear and I join IWC, you know, this beautiful watch company. And then he said to me, but mommy, no, I mean, hosiery is so beautiful. It is so beautiful. And then I said to him, it's funny that you say that, but I trust, you know, in a couple of years, you will say it the other way around. So it's really difficult to pick just one example. I have many where I'm really proud of. And of course, many, many at IWC, just what we accomplished a couple of days ago with our Watches and Wonders, which was a digital experience in Shanghai. It was a physical one, but all the rest was digital. And I mean, I'm proud of the teamwork, you know, that at the end we made an incredible digital fair happen with all the colleagues mostly working from home. I mean, this is just what makes you proud, right? I mean, that this just turned out to be so successful. I mean, that makes you proud. But and I give you now three, because what made me proud in the beer industry is that I fought it, you know, 2 years for a beer from women to women. And, you know, they said to me in Denmark, this is rubbish. You know, no one wants that. And I fought it for 2 years. And at the end, they said, okay, then you do it. You know, if you don't give in, then you do it. And this product is still around. I mean, okay. this is cool, you know, when you then fight so strongly. And I think this is something about me. I never give in. I really never give in. And this is what I always have to tell the women around me. This is success you have, right? I mean, you don't give in. You don't give in, because there's always another way, but you have to listen, you know, why the audience maybe is not buying into it, and then change maybe its strategy a little. But that made me very proud. And it makes me proud that the product is still in the shelf. I mean, that is fast moving consumer goods, right?
Yeah, you can be very proud of that. Great story. Last question, and that's I'm very interested in that. What was your first watch ever?
And that is now, because I didn't know that you asked me that question. It was an IWC, and I got that IWC from my godmother, and the watch was not ticking on my wrist. It was not ticking. And then I gave it to her, and on her wrist, it was perfect. On mine, it was not ticking. But my first was an IWC.
And do you still have it?
I still have it, yeah.
And are you giving it to your son?
My son is a boy, and that was a watch, not for a boy. But I already have a watch for my son, but he has to grow a little, you know, that he even more appreciates it.
What's it going to be?
It's a pilot's watch.
But, big or small?
A small one.
Small.
Yes.
The small, big. How do you call? I knew a little bit ahead that the 43 watch is coming around, and I thought, like, is this now the small big pilot or the middle big pilot or the big small pilot?
No, it's a big pilot 43. There is the big pilot 46, and there is the big pilot 43. Because it's still a strong statement, right? It's an icon and a statement. But I'm really happy, you know, that it comfortably sits on my wrist now as well.
It is. I could talk to you for hours. It's super, super interesting. But we have to stop over here. Thanks for everything you shared. Thanks for the sustainability part. Super interesting for me. And all to you guys out there, thanks for listening to Partners in Time podcast. Next week, it's Chris again. And I hope you gain some insights into the IWC world, at least some insights into Francisca's life. You live a great life. You do a great job. And you, the success you have, being able to say what you said about your job, kudos. That's great. That's great. That's great. I'm so happy for you. It really was a pleasure. Thank you very, very much for this last hour.
Thank you, Paul. It was a pleasure for me as well. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My dear listeners, thanks for your time. If you can't wait for the next episode, or maybe you want to know more about IWC, the unique watches, or the heritage of the brand, please check out the website of IWC or find IWC on social. Their handle is IWC Watches. Other than that, I'd love you to have you guys back for the next episode. If you don't want to miss it, subscribe to this podcast. Then you're never going to miss out on any upcoming episodes. See you later. My name is Paul Ripke. Thanks for your time.